first cousin, once removed, her uncle by marriage. Yeah? All I can tell you. I've told everybody. He's concealed in Tel Aviv. I said, would you like to see him? I said, yes. And then go to some back part of a cafe. Mm-hmm. Where he is frightfully gay mood. Mm-hmm. We have a long talk about relations, life, mm-hmm. who is married meanwhile. He's married a kind of sniperette. married some tough military lady, yeah. Some female soldier or something. Yeah. We chat away. He says, this will come to an end. One day we'll meet again. I've had 3 hours with him. The most agreeable talk, which my family would have disapproved of, mm. most strongly. Mm. And I tell my aunt in Jerusalem, she says, you cock, he's a frightful scoundrel. He left Genia. Yeah. How can you talk to him? Yeah. Suck. Really.
And did you mention it to your father?
When I came back, yes.
But I thought he was with you on that trip. No, he wasn't with you on that trip. 47.
Yes, he was. Yes. But he left for me.
Yeah.
I didn't go back with him.
Right.
Right. I traveled back I traveled back on my own somehow.
Right.
He went after a week.
Yeah.
I went about a month later.
Yeah.
Maybe 3 weeks. Then, you know, I suddenly, yes, then, I did mention to my father at the time, no, it's his brother-in-law, no, he'd be too upset. And then I meet him again in, I suppose, 50, which I think is my next visit. Mm. And by this time he's a national hero. Mm. He takes part in the war against Egypt. With 2 grenades in his hands, shouting loudly, he runs and he attacks the fortress. The Egyptians flee immediately, leaving their shoes behind. His house in Jaffa is full of trophies.
Yes, yes.
Daggers, yataghans, all kinds of leather goods, God knows what, and a goat, which is illegal. That's why he keeps it there. And Weizmann loves him.
Yes.
Ben-Gurion detests him. That's a dangerous man.
Yes.
There I meet a great friend of the Soviet ambassador, with whom he drinks vodka.
Yes.
I said, why are you such a friend? It's perfectly simple, he says. Let me explain. The Americans will never bomb us. The Russians may. We've got the Americans anyway, but we've got to keep in with the Russians. Perfectly simple.
So
he probably has left-wing views,
yes.
And his sniperette is there too.
Yes.
Very tough lady. And I enjoy my entertainment by him. Good deal. And then, after that, he dies of cancer. I think it's Tsurushi, about 2 days later. But he's a national hero.
In 52 or 53.
Yes. He's a national hero. Things are called after him. Streets are called after him. He's buried with greatest possible honors.
And he's called...
He's a historic figure. Yitzhak Sadeh.
Sadeh.
S-A-D-E-H.
But his...
Hebrew name.
His original name is...
Landoberg.
Landoberg. Extraordinary.
You see?
Absolutely. I want to get back to...
When I say to Israelis now, do you realize Yitzhak Sadeh is my cousin? They faint.
Yeah. Such a mild, inoffensive
character. No, but I mean,
character.
My whole relationship with me, Oxford,
yeah,
and all the rest of it, you see?
Yeah.
So Isaiah Berlin,
yeah.
Whatever the image of me is.
Yeah.
And now this revolutionary general. He became a general in the end.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
Oh, certainly. And he's sort of national hero Garibaldi.
Yeah.
I said to him, you're just Garibaldi. He used to send me postcards signed Garibaldi.
But you liked him for his sense of humor, for his
and
warmth,
for his vitality.
Vitality.
Vitality and irresponsibility and extreme good humor and
yeah.
good fellow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously he liked fighting.
Yeah.
But he had no, he was generous by nature.
Yes.
No, nothing mean or small.
Yeah.
And for the middle, he could, in all respects except leave your wives, there's nothing wrong,
yeah.
nothing really wrong with him.
Yeah.
Except he wasn't a Zionist. Not really.
Yeah. Why did you say that?
Because he liked fighting.
Yeah.
Well, of course, he pretended he was a passionate for my country, Israel. Maybe he believed it, but it was pretty superficial. What he liked was the excitement.
Yeah.
Much more. He wasn't a serious. He wasn't a Zionist. He was just a jolly figure.
Yeah.
And sort of, it was the fight, like getting into it. Sort of Irish character.
Yeah.
Fundamentally. Rivers.
I want to get back.
Bakunin. Was like that.
Who?
Bakunin.
Bakunin. Yes.
Was like that.
Yeah.
Was any fighting to be done? Get prepared.
Yeah.
Didn't like peace. But he was very comfortable. My last story was a national hero living in a handsome house in Jaffa, confiscated from some Arab, no doubt, with a house full of military trophies and a lot of vodka.
Yeah. What?
Not a very normal Israeli spectacle.
Yeah. Yeah. What did Weizmann talk to you about during that visit in 47?
I can't remember. I mean, he talked about politics. He talked, of course, about the future of what would happen. By that time...
Was he very bitter towards Ben-Gurion? And
yes, he always was. He was in favor of the state, totally, after 46. Mm. After Bevin got to power, he thought there was an alternative.
Yeah.
Once it was clear, once the anti-Zionist policy of the foreign office resumed, you see, in 1944, the cabinet decided on partition secretly.
Mm. I didn't realize that.
No, it's not widely known. The papers are now printed in books, I mean, papers in the public record office. There was a meeting, there was a Palestine committee of the cabinet, presided over by, let us say, Morrison, which members were the secretary for the colonies, Ten, Secretary of India, Emery, who was a terrific presidentist, Dick Law, representing the foreign office, I don't know, must be another.
These are people you knew as well, so you would know what they were.
Yeah, but I never knew about this at all. This is a dead secret. Mm-hmm. They didn't. This is a secret committee. So it's not to rock the boat.
Yeah.
Not to rock the Arab boat.
Yeah.
And even the High Commissioner in Paris and McMichael, when the Jews loathed, and Moyne, who was the Minister of the Middle East, who were anti-Zionist, accepted this. Yeah. And said another way. The Jews and Arab can't live together. Mm-hmm. It's, unless you kill off the Jews, it has to be. So they produced a plan which was more generous than the Peel plan of 36-7. But this was kept under tremendous
wraps.
Except that Dr. Goldman, Weizmann was told about it. He never told me. Later. It's a total state secret. Sworn to secrecy remains there. But Dr. Nahum Goldman discovered it. Told me about it without any oath of secrecy at all.
When? At the time?
In Washington in 1945.
Oh my God.
You see? Mm-hmm. So of course we all know about it. Well, I was delighted to hear of it and sent a dispatch to the Foreign Office in which I said, it is difficult to continue to obey the directives of the office which are to rub into the Jews that the white paper is unalterable. Mm. When Dr. Nahum Goldman informs me that there is this plan in the Foreign Office. This may, of course, be mere gossip. And then there was a tremendous minute for the Foreign Office afterwards, public record office saying, this is horrifying. We told Dr. Weizmann in secrecy. But if he tells his friends this will get the Arabs, then what will happen? Mr. Berlin's dispatch is most worrying. But I knew then that all this stuff about the white paper was dead.
Yeah.
Because it's clear they didn't deny it. Mm. But this, and I don't think Moyne would have been murdered if they'd been known. Mm. You see?
Yes.
But anyhow, that's there. And that is why Bevin's policy, which was the opposite of this, was a major disappointment. Yeah. They thought we'd now gone back to 1939. 38-39. And that embittered Weizmann, said, there's no alternative now. It's got to be a state.
What's your sense of why Bevin took that course?
I don't know. Bevin, Bullock tries to defend him in his book on him. Bevin took that course for two main reasons. One was serious, namely that and the Arabs were more worth more than the Jews. I mean, the usual. There were many or more of them. Mm. And roughly the same reason the Soviet Union was proud of. Mainly because the Arabs are many more Arabs, that the British Empire needed the oil and needed the Arabs.
Yes.
Number one. which is the ordinary Foreign Office position. Secondly, he was rather anti-Semitic, although this is denied, but not in any special way. He was about as anti-Semitic as Khrushchev, for the same kind of reasons.
Yes.
Ravnik.
Yes.
Well, most trade unionists of that sort.
Yes.
You see, his image was a country in which a lot of Vera Bevins, simple farmers, crude but honest, now and then liable to bloodletting, but I couldn't blame them. Full of Laskis, whom he loathed.
Yeah.
You see, who absolutely drove them mad. Plus a lot of cigar-chomping Jewish, rich Jewish, vulgar Jewish millionaires in New York, hiring leaky boats to send a lot of Laskis without going themselves. That was the image.
Right. I see.
You see?
Right.
And that, believe me, there is something, some truth in it. And a lot of people like that, not any crude,
yes,
sort of illiterate peasant type,
yes,
would feel that about Jews, intellectuals,
yes,
that sort of thing.
Quantity, yeah.
You see?
Yes.
That's a natural reaction of a sort of lowbrow type.
Yes.
You see, not one of us. And it was the only thing Bevin cared about was trade unionism in England and all around the world.
Yes.
That was very tremendous.
Near as
absolute. And very near as art.
Yeah.
Whereas, part of, thirdly, the Foreign Office simply persuaded him that the Arabs would hate it, they'd be in blow up, and the British interests would suffer.
Yes.
Because they were thought to be anti-Arab to that extent. There's no point in doing it.
Yeah.
You see, the entire Foreign Office practically was anti-Zionist. So it wasn't surprising. The only thing was that he could have. You see, at the end of the war, well, I mean, it was difficult to impose partition. It would have led to trouble with the Arabs, certainly.
Yeah.
Some kind of quasi-civil war, but still, it would probably cost less lives than the end.
Yeah.
And I think Bevin thought that the Jews are getting above themselves. Yeah. And someone said, it's rather like Ireland, isn't it? It's rather like Ulster. He said, yes, but Ulster, they are actually in Ulster. It's our country. It isn't the Jews' country. Mm. So there was that.
Yeah.
Artificial.
Yeah.
Just unnecessary. Superfluous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tenable position. I can see how people might feel that.
Yeah.
9 people out of 10 would probably, officials would probably take that line.
Yeah.
It's difficult. It's embarrassing. It's dangerous. Mm. Why should we bear the burden of it?
Yeah.
And so then he got out of Palestine altogether.
Yeah.
But he always thought the United Nations would not favor the partition plan. And then he would be handed back to England, when he would then save the Jews from the Arabs by creating some little enclave for them.
Yeah.
I think that was the purpose.
Yeah,
was he?
Yeah.
Roughly. But there's no doubt that he's one of the founders of the State of Israel.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Without him, I don't think. You see, what happened is this. Truman asked Bevin, asked the English, whether they would accept a plan to send 100,000 Jewish refugees to Palestine. That would obviously irritate the Arabs. That was turned down. If it had been accepted, there would have been no Israel state. The Americans only became pro-state because, to some extent, because of frustration, where the British turned down their plan for refugees.
Yes.
You see, after that they prepared to support something else.
Yes.
But if they'd accepted the plan, whatever it cost, for the importation of 100,000 Jews, the Americans would have called that a day at that time. True or no?
Yes.
You see, that was a miscalculation.
Yes.
Then Bevin went to New York, and then he was asked to go to a baseball game or a football game of Jews suddenly staged demonstration against him.
Mm.
That was unexpected and very displeasing.
Yeah.
He had to leave early.
Mm.
But he was regarded as the enemy.
Yeah.
Bevin Grad, yes. But Adolf Bevin, right, some began talking about in 46.
Yeah.
He developed a great hatred of him, personal hatred of him. Weizmann and Bevin was not a possible combination in a room.
Yeah.
Couldn't have
47 the last time you saw Weitzman, or did you see him again?
I saw him again. I stayed with him 51, I think. Mm. He died 52, 3. Mm. I stayed with him twice, I think, after that.
What was he like in 51?
When he was president.
What was he like as president?
Embittered. Ill. Nothing to do. He banned the story that he called on him and he said, Mr. President, what are you doing? He said, what I am doing, I am said to be a symbol of the state of Israel. What am I doing? I sit here and symbolize, he said. They tell me that Israel, Moses, not Israel, Moses, that Moses, that Charette, has 300 secretaries now. What does he do with them all? That guy's a joke. Yeah. They called on him, the Zionist leader said, Dr. Weizmann, we've all changed our names. Charette was Shertok.
Yeah.
Shertok. Dr. Rosenblüt, become Rosen. Ben Gurion was called Green.
Yeah.
It was his German name. Don't you think you should find some distinguished biblical name as president of the state? But the difference between me and you, said Weizmann, is I have something to lose.
Wow. Yes, I begin to get the sense.
We'll get the atmosphere. We'll get the atmosphere.
Yes.
You see? No, he was a bit very bitter. Bitter and quite interesting about his past, about Russia, all that. We could talk to him about his life. It's quite interesting. But that was the time, 47, when the two sergeants were abducted and ultimately hanged in Netanya.
Yeah.
And that I remember being terrified, I told you this. I was absolutely outraged by this. I thought it was the awful thing. And I knew Begin was the man in charge. And that's when I took against Begin and against terrorism in general. Before that, I thought quite well of the Russian terrorists in the 90s. I thought,
rather,
well, they were brave revolutionaries. The regime was awful. The regime was oppressive.
Yes.
And these were brave liberal revolutionaries. They weren't even socialists, some of them. I mean, SRs and Narodnaya Volya, God knows what their political program was.
Yes.
Anarchist, if anything. They were just high-minded. And Vera Zasulich was only trying to shoot some wicked governor who had caused political prisoners to be flogged.
It was Trepov, wasn't it?
Trepov killed somebody. Trepov, was it? Wait a minute. Vera Zasulich.
She may have missed.
She was only shot. Trepov? Yes, you're right. Kalayev? Kalayev killed the Grand Duke. The governor of Moscow and so on.
Yes.
The Grand Duke, the Tsar's uncle, I think. The Grand Duke.
Yes, I know exactly who.
Somebody, Dmitry Alexander. Grand Duke Alexander.
I've sidetracked you.
Kalayev, you killed him, and then the Grand Duchess tried to convert him to some kind of business, but he was a hard man, he wouldn't.
Yeah.
Wouldn't listen to her. Didn't want her visits. Preferred to be hanged. Trepov certainly killed somebody.
Yeah.
You're right. This is a period of...
Yes, sir. And that's
Who killed Minister of the Interior? On the 20th century. What's his name? Plehve.
Plehve.
He was killed.
Yes.
By, I think, Gershuni. Doesn't matter, I mean, that is the period.
But that was...
Well, these are monsters, you see.
Yeah.
These were real Tsarist sort of oppressors and were sort of flogged political prisoners and were obviously reactionary and the Semites, anything you like. So therefore, one of the early times, I became rather sentimentally in favor. I used to argue George Kennan, but that they were terrible people. And these people, all revolutionaries are dreadful.
Yeah.
And see, and I used to try and defend them. And say they,
this was during the war, or in Moscow was, in 40?
Sort of, no, in Moscow in 45.
Yes.
But after 47, My infantry, suddenly.
And you were pulled. You were pulled because these were ordinary British sergeants, just ordinary.
And altogether, they began shooting the English, just in general, haphazard way.
Yeah.
You see, it was revenge for somebody who, I think it was actually revenge for some, I can tell you, some Jewish terrorist who was assassinated quietly by two British police officers who had to leave the country.
Yeah. But isn't, it's not that I necessarily believe this argument myself, but isn't it precisely the use of terrorism in the creation of the State of Israel that's the most troubling example of the of a consequentialist justification of terrorism? It worked.
No. I've never believed that. I may be wrong. I've never believed that terrorism is what got the British out. That's what they They didn't enjoy it. But when I saw the Colonial Office officials at lunch with Weizmann in 47, there was a little collection of high foreign Colonial Office officials who were inspecting, simply on tour of inspection of Palestine to know what to do.
Yeah.
They came, were quite nice people, and they had lunch with Weizmann. I was staying. So I talked to them and I said, there's a lot of talk about the possibility of abandonment of Palestine. They said, no question of that. Forget it. That is the Colonial Office. They fought against it to the end. Mm. It was decided upon because the military thought that after the loss of India, there was absolutely no value in Palestine strategically. Mm. There was no point. Egypt had gone or was going. And India had gone. So for the whole argument of having these fortified places, maybe Cyprus had to be kept for the sake of the Mediterranean fleet. If one believed in defending Malta, one believed in a Mediterranean fleet at all, which was afterwards, we see, but there was no point in keeping Palestine. Not a doorway.
So it was geostrategic, not...
The Foreign Office was rather reluctant to leave because a long period of protected sort of pro-Arabism. Mm-hmm. But they were persuaded that the price is too high.
But precisely, wasn't it, because the terror campaign made the price very high.
High for British domestic opinion. Getting the boys back.
Yes.
Getting the boys back. I don't think it's a material fact. I think if India hadn't gone,
they would have hung on.
Yes. And in the end, would have left. There's no point hanging about. They had no interest remaining there.
Yes.
It was not an outpost.
Yes. Whereas in the Northern Ireland case, there is every conceivable...
They left Cyprus in the end.
Yes.
The same reason. Now, that they did leave, presumably because of Yoga and terrorism and so on. Because everyone was against them.
So it works sometimes, that's the trouble.
In Cyprus, I think it did work, because it was Makarios and so on, because they had no allies at all in Cyprus. Neither right nor left. Nobody.
Yeah.
The Turks were up to a point favorable, but not enough.
Yeah.
But in Palestine, they had the Arabs, who wanted them to stay and protect them against the Jews. You see, and they were the majority, numerically.
Yes.
So they could have been persuaded to stay, I think, and could have... I agree, I mean, of course terrorism. It wasn't, when the terrorism wasn't large scale, what did they do? They blew up the King David Hotel. They killed hanged two sergeants.
Yes.
They...
Bernadotte, Moyne.
What?
Bernadotte.
They killed Moyne in Cairo.
Yes.
In yes. They killed
Bernadotte
in Jerusalem. That's quite right. Assassinated him. But this is not large scale terrorism.
Yes.
All right. That meant.
Well, then there's terrorism against the Arab villages.
Surely. No. Well, it was Deir Yassin, but when was there? That was 48.
That's
part of the Civil War, so to
speak. Yes, that's true.
Yes. Now, 47, well, there must have been, probably there were, in the clash with the Arabs, there was, must have. But it wasn't terrorism on a scale which makes an army leave.
No.
Four people. This means a dozen people dead.
Mm.
50 people dead.
Mm.
15 British officials killed, 25.
Mm.
But it isn't a mass thing.
Yeah.
This is, I don't myself believe that I may have had marginal influence. Yes. They thought they'd done it. Yes. Begin's book, autobiography, of course. Yes. The tribute also, yes. So on. I didn't do it. Yes. And people like Teddy Kollek will tell you it had no effect. Mm. The other side, Ben Gurion, never admitted it. It had the faint effect, yes, on events. Yes. Organized. We were a large, organized secret army. Which is against you, that no doubt has to be suppressed, right, going to stay. Yeah. But not terrorism. Yeah. Resistance, yes.
What, I'm going to have to leave in 1 minute, so this is my final question. What sort of physical impression, a sort of emotional impression as well, did the physical...
Okay.
World of Palestine make on you, both in 36 and in 47?
For 34.
34.
I thought what someone said, not me, was true, that Judea was the Old Testament and Galilee was New Testament. Judea is full of high places.
Yeah.
As Jabotinsky said, half oranges, beyond which you can't look. Mm-hmm. It's savage, yeah, and it's bleak, and it's frightening, and it's grand. Mm-hmm. And it's full of Old Testament sort of grandeur, and to sort of prophet Isaiah and all that. And Galilee is gentle and kind of green and sweet and pastoral, and that is, of course, the atmosphere of the New Testament.
That's
what.
Yeah. Up to a point. Yeah.
Up to a point. No, I'll tell you what, it made a deep impression on me because I went and looked at these kibbutzes in 47, 51, where you got a lawn company where.
Yeah.
And the Israelis were people born. They thought this was a new nation, not at all like the Jews outside, exactly what we wanted. These were not Jews at all. These were Israelis. And the difference between Israelis and Jews seemed to be very considerable, still is. And I thought, well, a new nation is being born, and the chasm between them and the Jews in diaspora will become wider and wider, and a very good thing too. You see, because...
What is it? Express that difference.
The chasm?
Yes.
Simply that, in my view, the Sabras are brownish people, exactly who, when you find them on the shores of whatever it may be, Tel Aviv, are like Cypriots or Maltese.
Yeah.
They're a native population living in a country that belongs to them, and are not particularly nice, necessarily, and not particularly intelligent, not particularly, certainly not very educated, but they're a natural population who do not ask themselves, what do people think of us?
Yeah.
They're not self-conscious.
Yeah.
They're natives living in their own land. It may be an illusion, it may be kind of what you can call self-induced, auto-suggestion, used to be called. Auto-suggestion.
Yeah.
Every day we grow happier and happier and happier. Well, nicer, nicer, nicer. This to be this famous doctrine. Late 20s, the Dr. Kuei, who taught that. Yeah. Anyway, I have to repeat that 3 times a day. Maybe that's, it's obviously very funny that it's an eternal critic from Mannheim should suddenly come and sit under a palm tree and said, this is my country.
Yes.
Totally exotic. Nothing to do with 2,000 years of it. Previous life.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, they believed it.
Yeah.
Huge piece of collective self-induced delusion, if you like.
Yes.
But the people who were born there felt at home.
Mm.
And that was the first time the Jews felt at home anywhere.
Yes.
They think they do New York now, maybe true, but not quite the degree. And that's, and therefore, they were quite different from the immigrants in England, America, who still fidgeted.
Yeah.
Still fidgeted. I tell you the story of Dave Yosef, a man called Bernard Joseph.
Yeah.
He was a Canadian lawyer,
yeah,
I think lawyer, who became governor of Jerusalem when it was besieged by the Arabs.
Yeah.
And nearly take, I thought it would fall. But a rather tough, brave man. He told me that a Canadian Jewish delegation came to call him, Zionist. Canadian delegation came to call himself for. Was Canadian Zionist himself. And I know he made suggestions about what they were to do They got back to Canada. And they said, I didn't quite do that because the Canadians won't like it. He said, I thought you were Canadians. That brought it out.
Yes, it's fascinating.
You see? And that delighted me. That I thought was the one thing which was worth quite a high price. And I then believed, but I believe not so strongly, that the Jews who wanted to assimilate should assimilate and cannot assimilate because they have nothing of their own to offer, because they're at home nowhere. And that's why they are naturally treated as foreigners by everyone, to some degree. But when they have their own country, then those who want to be Jews will go there.
Yes.
But those who don't will find it easier. They won't feel guilty about laying down some burden.
Yes.
You see, they're renegades.
Yes.
Because not to want to be Israeli wouldn't be criminal.
And why do you believe that less now?
Because I think the Jews, as a result of partly losing their religion and partly of still being regarded as metek by everybody else, and now Israel has become their religion.
Yes.
I mean, what makes them different than their neighbors is their sort of extension of Israel to themselves.
Yes.
And that again prevents them from assimilating. Still in time, maybe, if Israel behaves badly enough, they may abandon it, in which case they'll find it easier.